Welcome to the month of September. I'm David Fair, and this is 89.1 WEMU. Each month, as the first Friday rolls around, we spend some time exploring important environmental issues, from Lansing to Washington, around the state of Michigan, and occasionally from elsewhere around the country. My partner in WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment is Lisa Wozniak. Lisa is Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters, and welcome back for the September edition.
Always a pleasure, David.
Lisa, I think like most everyone else, you've been watching with some degree of horror at the devastation wrought by Hurricane Harvey and its tropical storm aftermath. What are your impressions as a human being, and then secondarily, as an environmentalist, in all the issues that lay ahead?
Well, obviously, a disaster beyond the scope of imagination for so many, and the number one thing right now is just simply to save people's lives. The images that we're seeing coming out of Texas are just unbelievable. And for me, this goes to the point that many have been stressing over time, that is, it is imperative that we address our infrastructure and our planning, especially for major cities. Houston's the fourth largest city in our country, and the rapid growth and the development there, the impervious surfaces. Houston, I think, added 24% more pavement between 1996 and 2011 in an already very built environment.
And there's nowhere for it to go.
There is nowhere for it to go. So there is no doubt that our lack of collective planning and, frankly, our focus on climate change is a necessity moving forward, and adaptation and resiliency is key.
I've heard those conversations that this can be linked to climate change. Is it maybe too early to make that kind of assessment?
Well, whether or not we link this directly to climate change, we know that the number of very, very drastic storm systems are increasing, and that our infrastructure is not able to actually stand up to it. So it behooves us to actually address this, because people's lives are at stake. We have homes in Houston that are like swimming pools, and in major highway systems that are like rivers. So we absolutely need to take into account that these increased storm systems are impacting our very way of life and our health on this planet.
And we've not seen that kind of flooding around here. However, we have seen flooding as a result of the impermeable surfaces that we've created in the Great Lakes region, and it does pose a risk moving forward. So it's not just infrastructure in Houston or in Texas or in the major cities, but throughout the country. And we've heard the promises from the current administration that infrastructure was going to be a priority, but it has not been a priority in decades. What have you heard legislatively that might move us towards that end? Is this the kind of catastrophic event that might make some progress?
Well, let's start at the federal level, and then we can move to the state. But just a few weeks ago, President Trump actually announced another executive order, which basically was put in place to speed up infrastructure projects. And in so doing, he basically rolled back a widely admired flood standard that required new federal constructions to account for climate change effects on storms and flooding. And to roll back this policy, one of many, flies in the face of common sense, basically, in what we're seeing in Houston.
You are listening to 89.1 WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment with Lisa Wozniak. Lisa is Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. Now, if you would like to help in Houston, immediate needs include money, supplies, and blood donations. There are a variety of charitable organizations assisting in the relief effort. Locally, you can contact the Washington All-Lenawee Chapter of the American Red Cross and the Salvation Army for some guidance on how you can directly help. Waters in the southeast portion, or in the southern portion of the United States, are not the only waters we have to be concerned with. Lisa, early this summer, experts were predicting a massive algae bloom in Lake Erie again. With all that's been happening in the news, both in the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey and politically, that issue has gone a little under the public radar. Has the bloom hit the lake as anticipated?
Well, it's definitely present, and it's accounted for, and it's growing. It's too early to tell how big it will actually be, but the predictions early on were that it was going to be around 7.5 on a 10-point severity scale for 2017. And just last week, Toledo moved the city's water from an all-clear to a watch status after the bloom passed over the city's drinking water intake valves, and the city began to remove microcystin via a treatment process. So while we don't know how large it will ultimately be, and that will be about mid-September when we can tell, Everyone's looking at this very carefully.
Are they looking at it as though it might be another one of those blooms that impacts a 500,000 people and their access to safe and clean water in Ohio and southern Michigan, as we've seen before?
Well, that certainly happened in 2014, and about 500,000 people, both, as you pointed out, both in Toledo and southeast Michigan, were impacted. This is not out of the realm of possibility, given the size of the 2017 bloom, and also when winds and the changing water patterns actually come into effect. If this ends up over the intake valves, this could impact. The city is, as I said, watching very carefully. But microcystin is a neurotoxin, and you know this is not anything to take lightly. When we had the shutoffs in 2014, people were told not only not to drink the water, but not to touch the water.
Well, it's been 3 years since we had that issue. Legislative solutions should have been put in place. Are we as far along on that front as we should be?
Great question. Well, Michigan joined with both Ohio and Ontario in vowing to take action to reduce phosphorus levels, which are linked to large-scale agricultural facilities as well as infrastructural problems, sewer overflows, and frankly, septic systems. And Michigan is the only state in the nation that does not have a statewide septic rule in place. And basically their joint pledge was to spur the algae growth by 20% by 2020 and 40% by 2025. But I will tell you that the plan that came out of the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality this spring is very weak. It doesn't get us to where we need to be. The plan currently as written is highly unlikely and doesn't have timelines or an estimate of resources needed to implement the plan. So great to have a plan, but we got to be able to figure out how to implement that plan.
Once again, you're listening to First Friday Focus on the Environment on 89.1 WEMU. David Fair alongside Michigan League of Conservation Voters Executive Director Lisa Wozniak. Before we break today, another water issue has to do with another of the Great Lakes, and that is Lake Michigan. At the center of the controversy is a corporation's right to withdraw increasing amounts of water in a for-profit endeavor. What I'm talking about is a recent proposal put forward by the bottled water company Nestle to further expand its pumping operations in Osceola County. Any advancements on that permitting process that might allow for greater withdrawals?
Well, the state has basically asked for another look at this proposal. What Nestle's asking to do is to move from pumping 150 gallons per minute to 400 gallons per minute in one of its wells.
So nearly a three-time increase.
That's right. And two nearby streams and more than 50 nearby wetlands could face serious consequences if the DEQ does not get this decision right. So a lot of people are watching and making their voices heard on this because there's great concern.
As they assess whether or not to grant that permit and the increase, we know the company has already been making large water withdrawals. Is there tangible evidence of environmental harm?
Well, some residents in that area would say that the answer is yes. The challenge now is to actually substantiate that. The company's been asked to go back and actually redo their analysis and come back and actually have proof positive that this will not impact the water table in that area. But just one thing we should make sure is pointed out here is that this is allowed due to a loophole in the Great Lakes Compact, which was passed many years ago by the Great Lakes states and in partnership with our Canadian provinces. And it bans diversions out of the Great Lakes Basin, but it allows water to leave the basin in containers of 5.7 gallons or less. So we're basically allowing Nestle and others to take our water for virtually nothing.
So what happens next in this process?
Well, I mean, we need this analysis to be complete. That is underway. We need to have a very clear determination of whether or not these local waterways can handle Nestle's increased consumption, and that right now has not been proven to be true.
With all of the issues we've discussed today, they are all issues that we will have to revisit in the future. They're not going away. Lisa, thank you very much for your time today.
Oh, you're welcome, David.
That is Lisa Wozniak, Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. For Lisa, I'm David Fair. Thank you for joining us for this month's edition of First Friday Focus on the Environment. It's an exclusive presentation of the News Department at 89.1 WEMU FM and WEMU HD1 Ypsilanti.